The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots to get to on today's program. First, an update on the upcoming PAC in Glasgow. That's this weekend, Saturday night, and then again Sunday afternoon. We've invited something like 660 trumpet readers. 49 have registered for the first night and 36 for the second day, and we've been getting around 55% to 65%. Following through to the actual event. So that's something to pray for. It looks like it'll be a relatively small gathering for the most part, but still hopefully one that will produce some good fruit, just like we've seen from the London PAC and also from the Belfast PAC. So we'll certainly have more to say on that probably on Friday's program, and then hopefully, like we have the last couple of PACs, we can play some sound from the weekend as well. Later on in the show, I want to get into Tucker Carlson's war against Media Matters. That's been going on this week, and we haven't really said too much about it. I have been just kind of following it here and there, however. And today, given what he has said on his Fox News program the last couple of nights, it does seem like it's something that we could monitor, because he's going up against the left-wing media, and that's going to make him a pretty big target for sure. So we'll look at that coming up in the next segment. But first, we've got to update you on Brexit. In just 16 days, Britain is supposed to leave the EU, and right now no one really knows what will happen. Will we leave, or will there be a delay? Is there going to be some kind of last-minute deal? Will Theresa May still be prime minister at that time? There's so much that's just totally, totally up in the air. And of course, the latest news coming out of Britain just last night, her latest attempt, Theresa May's latest attempt to leave with some kind of a deal. She's been negotiating with EU officials in recent days, and then brought the package back to the House of Commons last night and put it to another vote. Now, you might remember, it was just in January, I think it was January the 15th, that 432 members of Parliament voted against the deal. I think it was something like the worst loss in Parliament in history. So, as I say, she goes back to Brussels. She negotiates a new deal. She comes back now again. So it's history repeating itself, basically. She comes back now again and tries to get this new deal passed through, but it fails again spectacularly.
The ayes to the right, 242. The noes to the left, 391. So the noes have it. The noes have it. Unlock.
Not as a spectacular of a failure as January, but pretty close. 391 against and 242 in favor. A defeat by 149 votes. The New York Times asked today, how many more historic defeats can Britain stand? How much more of this can Britain withstand? The Drudge headline this morning, UK plunged into chaos. That's across the pond. Here in the UK, the Daily Mirror, Brexit delay, mayhem, all of these headlines. The Sun, it says, croaky horror show. It's referring to Theresa May's voice. I think she pretty much lost her voice. And the times she got up to speak last night, it didn't sound so good. Given how much I speak, though, it's hard not to sympathize with her. She's probably been working hard, trying to get something done, but it's not working. It's not working. The Daily Mail said the House of Fools, the Metro. Sorry, we haven't a clue. We don't know what's going on. No leadership. Does this sound like it's coming right out of Isaiah 3? The Times says, driven to despair. That sounds like something right out of the book of Hosea. There's a sickness. There's a sickness. They don't know it, but these headlines reveal the truth. How much more of this can Britain take? Asks the Daily Express. The Independent said it's out of control across the channel in Germany. The Bild newspaper, Britain is now in a state of crisis. That's the way Germany sees it. That's the way America sees it. Here you think of the 2.5 years, I guess it's been almost 3 years. This has been the biggest and most important project for the UK government over the last 3 years. ITV News political editor Robert Peston, he said this, tonight's defeat by 149 votes is also huge by all measures. And let's be clear, these are not defeats about rules and regulations for ice cream vans. They relate to the most important economic security and foreign policy decision this country has taken for many decades. This is, therefore, without precedent in modern times as a diplomatic and political failure for a prime minister. We just haven't seen anything like this. It says, it is all the more extraordinary that this rejection of her deal leaves all of us in the soupiest fog about what and how and even the weather of Brexit. And here we're just 16 days away. The Brits are trying to carry on with their lives, but they don't know about the next few weeks. So he's one of many voices calling for Mrs. May's resignation. Alison Pearson over at the Telegraph, she says, leadership requires a leader, and this one has been missing in action far too long. If you have suffered two of the biggest Commons defeats in a generation, just maybe people are trying to tell you something, Prime Minister. The Times of London says that she's ill-equipped to lead the country at this hour. That New York Times article, the one that said, how many more historic defeats can we withstand? It says, yet again, Prime Minister Theresa May has dragged her Brexit plan in front of the House of Commons. Yet again, she has been historically defeated. When it comes to Brexit, the only issue that has occupied her since she took office in July 2016, Mrs. May is completely and utterly powerless. This has been her one main objective. And here she is, powerless. She has no leverage in Brussels. And her plans keep failing. Massive defeats, in fact. So what is the road ahead? What's it going to look like for Britain? Today, I guess, Richard was telling me this morning, Parliament's going to vote on whether or not to leave without a deal. And Mrs. May, Theresa May, she's taken the unusual step of allowing a free vote, even though she's said so many times that no deal is better than a bad deal. Ministers are going to be allowed to vote against a no-deal Brexit. So that's giving them a lot of power to basically go against the will of the people. It seems like that's the way Parliament's going to go. They're going to vote no to leave the EU without a deal. They have to have a deal. The people just want to leave. That's what they voted for in 2016. But the government leaders, the parliamentarians, they have to have some kind of a deal that keeps the UK somehow or another connected in some way to the European Union, really subservient to the European Union. That's today. And then tomorrow, Parliament's going to vote, I think, whether or not to ask for a delay in Brexit. And that seems like it's something that could likely happen as well. But we don't know for sure. There's so much uncertainty. And there's such a lack of leadership. Melanie Phillips had a great take just this morning, a short little piece. She said, so here's how things stand. Leaving the EU with no deal is now the only way in which Parliament can implement the Brexit referendum result. A decision handed by Parliament to the people of Britain to make. Parliament handed the decision over to the people of Britain less than 3 years ago. And the people voted. They made their voice known. Phillips writes, all signs point to MPs voting today against leaving with no deal. They will be voting against the Act of Parliament they themselves passed, under which the UK leaves the EU on March 29th, regardless of whether or not withdrawal terms have been agreed. So they're going against their own previous votes, statements, promises. She says they will thus be voting to trash the decision of the people that they themselves invited the people to make. That's where we stand in Britain today. Skipping ahead to her conclusion, Melanie Phillips says, if MPs vote against leaving with no deal, they will just be voting to blow up Brexit. They'll be voting to blow up their own political parties and faith in British democracy itself. It really and truly is a crisis. You wake up this morning and life goes on. People drive to work and so on. But people are disgusted with their leaders. We're seeing a breakdown in the political system, in the democratic voice of the people. It's not being heard. Well, you've heard this before on this program, and you've read about it at thetrumpet.com. But we ask again, how did the United Kingdom get into this situation in the first place? And what does your Bible have to say about it? Of course, you've got people blaming this group or that person or this movement. Lots will blame Brussels. And there's certainly plenty of blame to go around if you just look at it humanly. The EU is essentially an imperialist institution. So, of course, they're looking into their negotiations with Britain and trying to gain more and more power. That's what they want. And the ordinary British citizen just wants to leave and get out from underneath that power, that influence, that dominance coming from the continent. And then you have the people in the House of Commons trying to find some kind of happy medium between both, and it's not working. It's a total failure in leadership. Isaiah 3, as I mentioned, talks about that in the first few verses. Hosea 5 and verse 12 talks about the sickness, comparing Britain to a moth-eaten garment, Ephraim. Things can look good on the surface, and you still can drive through the UK. You still can walk through London as long as you stay away from the areas rife with crime, knife crime and such. But you still can go to the theater district and think that, well, everything looks good on the surface. That's the way it is with a moth-eaten garment. My father talked about this in a program back in 2012. This is from the Key of David, clip 2.
But here is a spiritual rottenness that is right down to the bones. And their enemies keep growing faster and bigger. It seems like every single week I'm talking about Judah or the Jews right now. But it's really true of America and Britain as well. But do you know why that they don't see their problems? It tells you here why they don't see their problems. God says, I'll be to them like the moth. If you have a nice suit in the closet and you leave it there for a long time and don't check it, sometimes the moths will get in there and just eat out the insides, and the suit will still look good until you get it out of the closet and put it on, and then it falls apart. Everything can look good on the surface. God is saying you'd better look beyond the surface or you won't see what your problems are. And they're serious beyond words to describe. Serious problems.
We've got to look beyond the surface. Just like that prophecy in Hosea 5 brings out. It might look good on the outside, but what about the inside? What about the sickness? Now, we just basically updated you on this in the March issue of The Trumpet, the recent Trumpet magazine. It says, clearly Britain has fallen far from the height of its imperial power, but many observers fail to realize how bad conditions really are. They won't look beneath the surface, you see. Just like my father brought out there. It says, when Britain voted to leave the EU, many forecast a sunny future, freed from the shackles of Europe. Britain could be great again. Despite the chaotic handling of Brexit, this view persists. Some still think if we just make a clean break, if you just honor the will of the people. But as the Trumpet writes, yet Brexit is putting that moth-eaten garment to the test. And the longer time goes on, the more it becomes obvious that it's falling apart. It's falling apart. Other prophecies that you can take note of. Leviticus 26, verse 19. We talked about that just recently with respect to America. The pride of our power, it's broken. And then what about Isaiah 3? And God saying that he would remove the leadership. Isn't that ever the case? It's on display. We see it every day. This isn't for ancient Israel. God said to Isaiah, you write this in a book because it's for the last days. It's for the end time. That phrase in Isaiah 3, verse 1, the stay and the staff. God removes the stay and the staff. It says this in the Hebrew Chaldee lexicon, Jesenius. It says, the chief persons of a nation on whom the people lean. In other words, the leadership. And then it goes on to say in the same verses or that same passage, the mighty man, the man of war, the judge, the prophet, the prudent, the ancient, the captain of 50, the honorable man. God says, I'll take them all away. You'll lack leadership. It's like you won't have a head. You won't have a leader to guide you through. Well, and then you know about Isaiah 1, where it talks about the body being sick from head to toe. Isaiah 59, we talk about that often with respect to the truth. Truth failing, as it says there in that prophecy. But that too, that same prophecy describes this almost depressing lack of leadership. We look for light but find only darkness, the prophet writes. We look for bright skies but walk in gloom. We grope like the blind along a wall, feeling our way like people without eyes. Even at brightest noontime, this is from the New Living Translation, we stumble as though it were dark. Among the living, we're like the dead. We growl like hungry bears. We moan like mournful doves. We look for justice, but it never comes. We look for rescue, but it's far away from us. No solutions. No way out. Where are the blessings? Where are the bright skies? Going back to that March Trumpet issue, the latest Trumpet, it says in the 1970s, conditions looked grim in Britain. The once great empire was quickly becoming the sick man of Europe. So the nation turned to the continent in hope of a bright future. You see, in the 70s, the UK hitched its future to the continent, to the European Union. Or at the time, what was it? The European steel and coal community, whatever it was. It was a trade organization, a trade alliance. And then it became the European Union. Decades later, it says in the trumpet, it was clear that, just as Mr. Armstrong said, there is no hope in Europe. It's not like we're here on the Trumpet Daily radio show saying, if Britain just does this, everything works out. Or if Britain just goes this way, everything works out. Well, I guess we could say that, separate and apart from all of this. We could say, if Britain turned to God, thus the nation voted to leave, it says. Yet that hasn't brought the bright skies the nation searches for. Whichever way we turn, there's only darkness. Now we grope around, stumbling, unsure of what to do. That's paraphrasing that passage we just read. In that same chapter, Isaiah 59, it talks about our transgressions being multiplied. See, that's the one thing that all of us together have in common. We won't look at our sins. We won't repent and turn to God. And so it's bringing ruin and destruction upon our nations. The article says, in the eyes of many Euroskeptics, EU membership was the source of all Britain's ills. Leaving would solve everything. The last 2 years have proven this notion false. That is not to say EU membership was a good thing. In many ways, it was a curse. But that's the point, you see. The membership was a curse, and then trying to leave it, also curse. Ephraim, he has mixed himself among the people, it says in Hosea 7. Alliance, just like we've seen in history, anytime that Israel tried to put their faith, their trust, their confidence in human alliances or alliances with foreign nations instead of with God, it never did work out, did it? God said, look to me as your king. Look to me as your head. Well, you go back a couple years, quite a few people here in the UK, very optimistic. Now, it's pretty well divided, just like the United States. But you had a little over half the people in the UK very optimistic about the future. Okay, finally, we can leave. We can break free. We can go it alone. We can be, to borrow a phrase from the Trump campaign, we can be great again. My father wrote at the time, this is back in 2017, he said, but things have gotten messy. It's taken a few generations for the magnificent British Empire to fall from being the greatest empire in history. Well, he goes on, that's from 2017, I should say. And also, be sure to check out the latest issue of The Trumpet, the March edition, where we go through quite a lot of this recent back and forth and these complete fails in the House of Commons for the Theresa May government. God does have great plans for Britain looking forward. He does. Even when you look at the glorious history, God meant for it to be a model nation or empire. And it will be in the wonderful world of tomorrow. But right now, it just keeps going from bad to worse. That's the news from Britain, from down in Jerusalem. We keep our eyes on Jerusalem, of course, because it's the spark that's going to light up the conflagration, the prophesied time of destruction, tribulation. Yesterday, a Palestinian, I guess, hurled a Molotov cocktail at an Israeli police station. So the police responded adjacent to the Temple Mount. So the police responded by closing the compound, the Temple Mount compound, for the remainder of the day. And I guess they're going to reopen it sometime today. But this is from the Jerusalem Post. It says Abu Mazen, that's Mahmoud Abbas, Mazen continued to lie and incite violence together with the terror organizations of Murrah Batoon and Hamas in an attempt to ignite a fire and cause a religious war on the Temple Mount. That's according to an Israeli government agency. The other side, it says the Palestinian Authority called for international intervention to halt Israeli assaults on the Al-Aqsa Mosque and warned that Israel's actions would have grave repercussions. Abbas, it says, was in contact with relevant parties, specifically Jordan, to pressure Israel to stop this dangerous escalation. So a Palestinian firebombs the Temple Mount, and Abbas is calling on the powers of this world to stop Israel's dangerous escalation. And I'm sure he'll win a lot of sympathy from international leaders. That's the way that it always works out in the upside-down world. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Perhaps no hour in Britain's history was darker than that preceding World War II. Nazi Germany was arming. Nations in Europe were being conquered, their borders redrawn. Britain, the nation that once ruled one quarter of the earth, teetered on the edge of survival. Many leaders in Britain feared war. They wanted to disarm. They spoke of peace as Europe sank deeper into the pit of war. This dark hour may have been Britain's last, were it not for one man. This man stood alone in the face of adversity at home and abroad. He rose to the occasion when his nation needed him most. He vowed that Britain would never surrender when confronted by forces of evil. Winston Churchill took Britain's most important job during Britain's darkest hour. He did what others were afraid to do. Some doubted his methods, but the results speak for themselves. Churchill led Britain from the precipice of ignominious defeat and possible death to what became one of the nation's brightest hours. What was it that made Winston Churchill so different from other leaders of his time? Surely now, more than ever, this world needs another Winston Churchill. Our booklet, Winston S. Churchill, The Watchman, explains what made this man such a great leader. We would like to offer this booklet to you free of charge. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England. This is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
So this week there have been these clips making the rounds online of some crude remarks that Tucker Carlson, he's the nightly commentator or host on the Fox show each evening, and he made these remarks, I think it was something like 10, 12 years ago. This was back at a time when he's working at MSNBC. I don't want to get too far into the weeds on this, but he's working for MSNBC at the time. At the time, he's obviously not this huge, he's not pulling in huge ratings for a more conservative network. So he's making these crude remarks 10, 12 years ago. Nobody thinks anything of it then. But now Media Matters has been at work, and I'll talk more about Media Matters and who they are here in just a moment. But they're releasing these little snippets. They're pasted together, and then they're disseminated. And then you get the smear campaign off and running, and long before you know it, you're going to be having all the calls for him to apologize, to step down, for Fox to punish him. They go after the advertisers to try to get him boycotted. And what's been interesting to watch, and I just wonder how long he'll be able to do this. But he's really fought back. He's come out swinging the last couple of nights. He said two nights ago that he wasn't going to give in to the mob. And then last night, he let off his show, and he got into more specifics about his attackers going into these massive groups funded by billionaires like George Soros. And he explained in the monologue that you have these left-wing hate groups, really, that's what they are, the Southern Poverty Law Center, that take it upon themselves to identify what they see as hate speech. And then once it's identified as hate speech among the liberal mob, then they're supposed to be silenced. No debate. You don't hear their side. You just get rid of them. You drown out the voice. And that's what they want to do with Carlson's show, because it's really pulling in some of the best ratings on cable news. Really, that's what they want to do with Fox News. They just want to wipe out the entire cable news station. So he explained some of this lead up, the Southern Poverty Law Center saying this is wrong, this is hate, this is whatever. And then he says this is where Media Matters steps in. Let me just give you a few bits from his monologue last night, clip three.
Once they call the people you disagree with a hate group, you can move immediately to shut them up by force. And that's what they do. That's where Media Matters comes in. Media Matters is a George Soros-funded lobbying organization whose sole mission is to punish critics of the Democratic Party. Media Matters often uses propaganda from the Southern Poverty Law Center to bully corporations, news executives, and tech companies into punishing people it doesn't like.
So that gives you a little bit of the background. They bully you. They want you to be punished. They want you to be boycotted. They want to just eliminate Tucker Carlson's show altogether. He went on to say this, clip four.
Not surprisingly, the media love Media Matters. One former employee described the group's relationship with MSNBC this way. Quote, we were pretty much writing their prime time. When Media Matters issued a press release, MSNBC picked it up, quote, verbatim. Media Matters staffers once explained that the organization's close relationships with journalists in the National Press Corps were vast. Here are some quotes. Quote, Greg Sargent of the Washington Post will write anything you give him. Ben Smith, now at BuzzFeed, will take stories and write what you want him to write. The people at Huffington Post were always eager to cooperate. Jim Rainey at the LA Times took a lot of our stuff. Brian Stelter at the New York Times was helpful.
So they're all in it together. Collusion. Media Matters is it's supplying all of these news organizations with their content. They take what Media Matters feeds them, and then they run with it. Now, when I was getting this together this morning, I thought of Cheryl Atkinson's book, Smear. She wrote this a few years ago, but there's a whole chapter in there about, as she calls it, the smear frontier. And she talks about, well, George Soros is behind it. He's one of the ones who funds it. But she talks about this this David Brock, who back in the early 1990s was from more the of the conservative side, I guess you could say, a commentator. But then he switched somewhere in the mid-90s and then eventually founded this group, this nonprofit organization called Media Matters. And listen to what Cheryl Atkinson says about this this company, Media Matters. She says, the collection of groups was cited to me. Well, she's talking about the feedback she's gotten from members of the media. She says, this collection of groups was cited to me by nearly every Democrat and Republican operative I interviewed as the most ubiquitous and successful operation of its kind in its first decade. Speaking of Media Matters, it's just everywhere, everywhere. Now, you don't see it out front. It's the news organizations, the journalists that are out front with the message. But be assured, they're working behind the scenes. It says, Brock is the front man, a face for those who would rather remain faceless. And over the years, he's rewarded himself handsomely. He's collected salaries from at least seven of his organizations. Could be more, she says. But he keeps some of the details a secret. Well, we'll come to that tax-exempt status in just a moment. But later on in this chapter from Cheryl Atkinson's book, she says, over the course of many months, I've pieced together information available from a myriad of tax documents and public reports. One thing is clear. Brock has made millions from his tax-exempt groups. Perhaps more significant, he's had a dramatic impact on how the media functions, the kinds of stories it tells, and journalists' unwillingness to critique the left with the same zeal that they attack the right. That's what Tucker Carlson was talking about. All of those direct quotes. Oh, yeah, they'll say exactly what. We put out a press release and they run with it. It's the absolute truth. Atkinson says Brock's single most important achievement is his uncanny ability to integrate Media Matters into the mainstream news culture as a news source. That's been his single greatest achievement. When you're listening to the left-wing news in the United States, you're listening to, for the most part, Media Matters. David Brock, George Soros, and the like. That's where they all get it from. That's where the talking points come from. Now, in that monologue, Tucker Carlson's piece last night, he refers to the New Republic, which is a liberal publication, and talks about how that in the history of Media Matters, of course, it was pretty obvious it was a left wing, far to the left, and that it had political connections going way back. But at least out front, they tried to say, well, we're just a kind of a watchdog group. We're just trying to ensure that there's fairness in the media. But according to the New Republic, in 2016, the lead up to the election of Donald Trump, it changed its mission, saying that it was basically running for Hillary Clinton. It was in the Clinton camp. Here's one last clip from last night's monologue from Carlson, clip 5.
In a leaked 2015 memo from inside Clinton's campaign, staff discussed cooperating, coordinating, colluding with Media Matters to attack Republicans and accuse the press of biased coverage of Hillary. In an email from January 5th of 2016, Hillary's staff discussed working with Media Matters to counter a Vanity Fair piece on Huma Abedin. Quote, we have Media Matters and core surrogates lined up, which we can expand on tomorrow. This isn't just unethical, it is illegal. Under IRS regulations, 501c3 nonprofits are totally prohibited from participating in the campaigns of political candidates. Media Matters broke the law. The group has never been punished for this, though it is widely known. Media Matters retains its tax-exempt status. That means that you and every other taxpayer is subsidizing attacks on our own First Amendment. Why is this? How can this be happening? Maybe someone should call the IRS tomorrow morning and find out.
It openly advocated the campaign of Hillary Clinton, and yet it retains its tax-exempt status. Now, Cheryl Atkinson brought this out in her book as well, the same point that Tucker Carlson just made. Her book, I just looked during the clip there. She distributed this in 2017, so it's not that old. It's just a couple of years ago. But she writes that Media Matters was started under the same IRS tax-exempt category as charities and religious organizations. It's like a church. It gets the same tax-exempt status considerations that a church would or a charity. It's called a 501c3. There's no limit to how much money these groups can accept from individuals, corporations, and unions. It says, in return for this wide latitude afforded by the IRS, and to theoretically keep the corrupting influence of big money separate from political campaigns, 501c3s are barred from engaging in political campaign activity. They're barred from engaging in political campaign activity. And that's been going on, and it's been going on for years. And like Tucker Carlson says, everybody knows about it. And yet nobody does anything. We're seeing here, again, more evidence of how deep the deep state is. You'll remember Lois Lerner and when she was in charge during the Obama years, the scandal of her actually preventing legitimate charity organizations or religious groups from getting tax-exempt status because she thought they were conservative. On the other hand, here are organizations like Media Matters, clearly a political wing, a political arm. And yet they continue on, tax exempt, no limit on the size of donations coming from George Soros or whoever. It's a swamp, as Donald Trump said a couple of years ago. And you can see why when there's a target as big as Donald Trump or as big as Tucker Carlson, who has a very popular show on Fox News, you can see why they unleash the pack of wolves on someone like that. Their goal, their aim, is to take them out, to silence them. This chapter in Cheryl Atkinson's book, it's just chapter two, The smear frontier, and there's on page, let me see if I can find it, page 50 of her book. I read this a couple years ago and was reminded of it this morning. She talks about, and she's using the example of Don Imus. I guess this happened back in, 10, 12 years ago when they kicked him off the air for a crude remark that he made. And she explains in this, just a couple of pages, the six steps of the smear campaign. Number one is to launch the campaign. To launch the campaign. She said, within hours of Imus's comments on radio, Media Matters posts a video clip and a transcript along with its first blog posting attacking him. A remark that relatively few saw or heard is now amplified with help from the internet. That you just changed the name from Imus to Tucker Carlson, and that's what you're seeing play out this week. Get the clips from 10, 12 years ago, clips that nobody saw or remembered, and now put them out there, put the transcript, publish the video, do some strategic editing, of course, and put it out there. It says they publish a video and come up with a headline that will best activate supporters, an insider would later observe, speaking to the attention-grabbing technique. Another describes Media Matters' strength as in being so fast, it's unbelievable. Its strength boils down to speed, volume, and breadth. They have so many allies. That's the thing. And when they go after someone like Tucker Carlson, as I say, their goal is to take him out. That's why it's going to be fascinating to watch, to see how this unfolds, because right now he's fighting back. And he's got a pretty big platform himself. It's war. It's a media war. It's an information war. And it gives you some insight, too, I think, into how Satan is going to come after God's work, God's people. Step two, she says, distribution. So you launch the smear campaign, and then you distribute. You circulate it as a news story via email to hundreds of reporters and journalists that they've got on the list. Like you heard Tucker Carlson say, we send it over to the New Republic, or we send it over to BuzzFeed. We know they'll run with it. They're all colluding together. And then the pressure is put on. The journalists run with it. And then the third step is outreach. Media Matters identifies like-minded organizations to whip up outrage and further the smear. Since this instance involved a racial remark, the one with Don Imus, Media Matters partners with black journalists, the NAACP, and other civil rights groups. Media Matters' Brock gets on the phone and personally calls the heads of various liberal activist groups to coordinate a message. This is something. What we're seeing here, this is their strategy. And it's far worse than any remark that someone makes on a radio program or whatever. Now, some of those remarks, people, they do need to speak up and explain themselves. But when you get the mob coming after you, you better watch out. The fourth step is escalation. The story's crossed over from gossip or a one-line news note into the mainstream. See, first you see it in Mediaite. You see it as a little clip, just like we did this week with Carlson. And then the next thing you know, it's at the New York Times. It's at USA Today. It's on CBS. It's at CNN. Carlson refuses to step down. Carlson offers no apology. We've seen this strategy at work this week. It says CNN takes the bait and writes an article titled, "Imus has a history of offending." Just like this week. See, well, it wasn't just those comments that he made on the radio show years and years ago, Tucker Carlson. He has a history of doing this, don't you know? He hates women. He hates these groups. It says in many publications, this is from Atkinson's book, in many publications, the shock jock's remarks garner coverage beyond that devoted to the Somali Civil War. Does that sound familiar? Step five. Here's the fifth step. In the six-step campaign to smear someone, to destroy someone. Step five, the demands. Media Matters and its advocates demand and receive an apology from Imus. He publicly calls his remarks thoughtless and stupid. Now, this didn't quite play out the way they were hoping with Carlson, at least not yet. CBS and MSNBC announce he'll be suspended for 2 weeks. However, the smear artist doesn't seek an apology for the purpose of putting a controversy to rest. He exploits it as an admission of guilt to exert pressure to further squash the target. The groups attacking now demand that he be fired. And then we come to the sixth and final step, and that is pressure. Media Matters minions turn up the pressure with rapid-fire stories and convince advertisers to threaten to pull commercials from the show. It says two words should not ruin a person's career. That's referring to whatever it was that Imus said. I forget. But then later on it says, but in 8 days, it's all over. Imus is fired from both CBS Radio and MSNBC, a personality who once reportedly generated $25 million a year for CBS and $8 million a year for MSNBC. But he gets on the bad side of Media Matters, and his career is over. His career is destroyed. So you see the same strategy at work this week as they try to destroy Tucker Carlson. Of course, the bigger target, as I said earlier, is Fox News. They really want to get rid of Fox News because, well, the New Yorker wrote about it. It's a propaganda arm of the White House. And there's no room for that in the United States. You can't be a propaganda arm for the White House. That's the way they see it, I mean. You've got to say it. You've got to report it. You've got to talk about the news just like we do. If you think about this attack on President Trump, just to take this example for a moment, going after him, saying that he was colluding with Russia and so on, and that he cheated his way to victory and he had all of this outside help. Look at this. As far as outside help is concerned, whether it's for Hillary Clinton or whoever else, we've had some material pulled together on Google and the impact of Facebook and Twitter and all these reports in recent weeks and months about how that they carefully select with their algorithms and such, how they carefully select what it is that is featured and what it is that's pushed down on the list. There's a USA Today article from a few months ago saying that most reporting on this topic has focused on the banning of conspiracy monger Alex Jones for many social media platforms. But the censorship drive goes well beyond InfoWars. Conservative author Doug Weed published a detailed analysis showing how Google systematically stifled his content from being available on YouTube and in Google search results. John Hinderaker writes how Google did the same to Dennis Prager and his Prager University videos. And when Prager went to court over it, Facebook piled on and reduced the reach among his 3 million followers to zero. Because I guess, well, Facebook would say Dennis Prager is, he's out there with hate speech. They're all in it together. It says in a confidential memo by Media Matters, this is from the USA Today in August, from 2017, detailing how major social media platforms can collude to eliminate right-wing propaganda and fake news was recently exposed. That was last year. A memo by Media Matters exposed saying how that all these social media platforms, we can collude together to make sure we eliminate right-wing propaganda. Notice what, and again, this fits right in with what Cheryl Atkinson said. The USA Today column says social media companies say that the people they ban have violated the terms of service, such as engaging in hate speech. See, well, this, if the Southern Poverty Law Center says it's hate speech, we can't have it on Twitter. We can't have it on Facebook. And like this piece brings out, the other side will say, well, but it's Alex Jones. We've got to, we can't have him violating all of our rules and regulations. It's not just Alex Jones. It's Dennis Prager. It's Doug Weed as well. It's conservative authors. Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey admitted that his company skews leftward, but denies that this has any impact on what content is allowed on the platform. Of course. Yeah, we do lean to the left, but that doesn't impact our decisions. This is what they all say. Remember Google's reaction when Donald Trump was voted president? Remember that clip we played? They had a large gathering with the Google leadership there on stage. And all of the audio was captured and then released later by Breitbart. Take somebody like Breitbart to get the news out there, the truth. All of them just appalled. This is Google, which funnels so much information all across society. Absolutely appalled that Donald Trump could be elected as president of the United States. Another article I have here from the USA Today as well. It says, while President Barack Obama was in office, Google kept a cozy relationship with the White House. Google representatives attended White House meetings more than once a week during the first 7 years of Obama's presidency, and almost 250 individuals left government service to work for Google or vice versa while Obama was in office. They're totally in bed with each other. Google, Twitter, Facebook, Media Matters, all of the main media organizations, and then you've got a lone voice, Fox News, Tucker Carlson, a few on talk radio, and they must be smeared. They must be relentlessly attacked. Their voice needs to be buried. They're haters. They have hate speech every day. And we've got to stop them. And they've got a strategy to do it. They've got a 6-step plan to do it. And over again, it's worked. It's worked. And so we'll keep our eyes on this ongoing war between Tucker Carlson and Media Matters. I think it's important to understand a little bit of the background there. Who's behind these tax-exempt organizations? We'll be commenting on it in the days ahead, I'm sure. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to send us some feedback or some comments, you can email us at td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.